And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas, gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's July 27th, 208th day of the year. 157 days remain to the year's over with. And I made mention of my continual battles with crooked attorneys and crooked roofers and what have you. I just talked to the liability company. To be a contractor here, you have to have liability insurance. But they refused to file the claim. They said if they did, their rates would go up, so they would just use our insurance instead of theirs. So their liability company has been the one been paying these 14 attorneys this six figures over the last 8 years, not knowing that a court had already found that the roof failed. So we had a long talk today. I don't know if anything could come of it or not. The Rich Forrest is still in the hospital. He's been moved to a new one. Maybe this one's got its act together. So he needs to get up and get back to work. In the year 1054, Siward, Earl of Northumbria, invades Scotland and defeats Macbeth, King of Scotland, somewhere north of the Firth of Forth. 1189, Frederick Barbarossa arrives at Nis, the capital of Serbian King Stefan Nemanja, during the Third Crusade. 1202, Georgian Seljuk Wars. At the Battle of Bassian, the Kingdom of Georgia defeats the Sultanate of Rum. Too bad it wasn't the Kingdom of Tequila. 1214, Battle of the Bovines. Philip II of France decisively defeats Imperial, English, and Flemish armies, effectively ending John of England's Angevin Empire. 1299, according to Edward Gibbon, Osman I invades the territory of Nicomedia for the first time, usually considered to be the founding day of the Ottoman state. 1302, Battle of Baphius. Decisive Ottoman victory over the Byzantines, opening up Bithynia for Turkish conquest. 1549, a Jesuit priest, Francis Xavier's ship, reaches Japan. Oh, speaking of the Orient, I noticed that the news said China's getting ready to invade Taiwan. We'll see what happens there. 1663, the English Parliament passes a Second Navigation Act requiring all goods bound for the American colonies to be sent on English ships from English ports. After the Acts of Union in 1707, Scotland will be included in the Act. 1689, the Glorious Revolution. The Battle of Killiecrankie is a victory for the Jacobites. In 1694, Royal Charter is granted to the Bank of England. As I remember, several wealthy investors went to the king and said, "We'll loan you the money you need if you give us a charter to have a bank." And he said, "Okay." 1714, the Great Northern War. First significant victory of the Russian Navy in the naval battle of Gangut against the Swedish Navy near the Hanko Peninsula. 1775, founding of the U.S. Army Medical Department. Second Continental Congress passes legislation and establishes a hospital for an army consisting of 20,000 men, which is, in the broad scheme of things, is not much. 1778, American Revolution, First Battle of Ushant, British and French fleets fight to a standstill. 1789, the first U.S. federal government agency, the Department of Foreign Affairs, is established. It's going to be later renamed the Department of State. 1794, French Revolution. Maximilian Robespierre is arrested for encouraging the execution of more than 17,000 enemies of the Revolution. If he didn't like you, you were an enemy of the Revolution. 1816, in the Seminole Wars, the Battle of the Negro Fort ends when a hotshot cannonball fired by the U.S. Navy gunboat 154 explodes the fort's powder magazine. Kills about 275 people. Considered the deadliest single cannon shot in U.S. history. 1857. Oh, one more thing. What was known as the Negro Forts, a short-lived fortification built by the British in 1814 during the War of 1812. and is built in a remote part of what at that time was Spanish Florida. It was intended to support a never-realized British attack on the U.S. via the southwest border, which means they could free all the southern countries or states from the yoke of the Americans. Built on a military significant site overlooking the Apalachicola River, it was the largest structure between Augustine and Pensacola. Trading post of Panton, Lesney and Company, and then John Forbes and Company, or enlist hostile to the U.S., that existed since the late 18th century there and at the San Marcos Fort. They served the local Native Americans, the fugitive slaves. The fugitive slaves having been enslaved on plantations in the American South used their knowledge of farming and animal husbandry to set up farms stretching for miles along the river. When they withdrew in 1815, at the end of the war, the British commander, Edward Nicholas, intentionally left a fully armed fort in the hands of his former corps of colonial Marines. And that corps was made up largely of free Negroes and fugitive slaves. Also at the fort were Creek and Choctaw allies who had served alongside the British during the war. Nichols hoped the fort would become a center and a symbol of resistance to American slavery. It's the largest and best-known instance before the American Civil War in which armed fugitive slaves resisted white Americans who sought to return them to slavery. Now, the British didn't name the fort. The name Negro Fort was coined by Indian agent Benjamin Hawkins. And the Creeks who were there before the Europeans arrived had rights that the Africans didn't have. And Hawkins led the cause for the fort's destruction. The fort was destroyed in 1816 at the command of General Andrew Jackson in the battle, also called the Battle of Prospect Bluff, and or the Battle of African Fort. The Africans had not been trained in the use of the cannon and other heavy munitions, so they couldn't really defend themselves. And from a boat on the river, American forces used red-hot shot trying to start a fire, and instead, they blew up the powder magazine. Now, In 1857, during the Indian Rebellion, 68 men holed out for 8 days against a force of 2,500 to 3,000 mutinying sepoys and 8,000 irregular forces. Sepoy mutiny was one of the major uprisings in India. It had been the backbone of British local forces, but unfortunately. 1865, Welsh settlers arrived at Chubut in Argentina. 1866, the first permanent transatlantic telegraph cable successfully completed. Stretched Valentia Island, Ireland, to Heart's Content in Newfoundland. 1880, Second Anglo-African War. Afghan War. Battle of Maiwan. Afghan forces led by Mohammed Ayub Khan defeat the British Army in battle near Maiwand in Afghanistan. 1890, Vincent van Gogh was said to have shot himself, and he died 2 days later. Others said he was murdered. Don't really know the full story about that. 1900, Kaiser Wilhelm II makes a speech comparing the Germans to the Huns. And for years afterward, Hun would be a disparaging name given to the Germans. 1917, World War I. The Allies reached the Yser Canal at the Battle of Passchendaele. 1919, the Chicago race riot erupts after a racial incident occurred on a Southside beach. 38 fatalities and 537 injuries over a five-day period. 1921, researchers at the University of Toronto, led by biochemist Frederick Banting, proved that the hormone insulin regulates blood sugar. 1922, the Parliament of Finland passed a law about illegitimate children, which appointed Finnish municipalities to monitor the interest of unmarried mothers and their children. 1929, the Geneva Convention of 1929, dealing with treatment of prisoners of war, signed by 53 nations, and immediately ignored. 1940, the animated short of Wild Hares released, introducing the character of Bugs Bunny, one of the greatest minds of the cinema. 1942, World War II, Allied forces successfully halt the final Axis advance into Egypt. 1947, in Vatican City, Rome, canonization of Catherine Labori, the saint whose apparition of the Virgin Mary originated the worldwide diffusion of the miraculous medal. 1949, initial flight of the de Havilland Comet, the first jet-powered airliner, took place. 1953, cessation of hostilities achieved in the Korean War when the U.S., China, and North Korea signed an armistice agreement. Syngman Rhee, president of South Korea, refuses to sign but pledges to observe the armistice. 1955, the Austrian State Treaty restores Austrian sovereignty. 1955, LAL Flight 402 is shot down by two jet fighters after straying into Bulgarian airspace. All 58 people on board are killed. 1959, the Continental League is announced as baseball's third major league in the U.S. Didn't last long, though. 1964, Vietnam War. 5,000 more American military advisors sent to South Vietnam. Brings the total of U.S. forces in Vietnam to 21,000. 1974, Watergate scandal. House of Representatives Judiciary Committee votes 27-11 to recommend the first article of impeachment against President Richard Nixon. That was for obstruction of justice. Didn't matter what they called it. They were out to get the man. 1975, the mayor of Jaffna and former MP Alfred Dreyfus is shot dead. 1981, while landing at a Chihuahua International Airport, Aero Mexico Flight 230 overshoots a runway. 32 of the 66 people and crew on board are killed when that DC-9 comes to a stop. 1983, Black July. 18 Tamil political prisoners at the Wilikata high security prison in Colombo were massacred by Sinhalese prisoners. That's the second such massacre in 2 days. 1989, while attempting to land at Tripoli International Airport in Libya, Korean Air Flight 803 crashes just short of the runway. 75 of the 199 passengers and crew and 4 people on the ground are killed in the second accident involving a DC-10 in less than 2 weeks. The first one was United Airlines Flight 232. 1980, Supreme Soviet of the Belarusian Soviet Republic declares independence of Belarus from the Soviet Union. To 1996, the day celebrated is the Independence Day of the Belarus. After a referendum held that year, the celebration of independence was moved officially to June the 3rd. 1990, the Jamaat at al-Muslim attempt a coup d'etat in Trinidad and Tobago. 1995, the Korean War Veterans Memorial is dedicated in Washington, D.C. on this date. 1996, in Atlanta, a pipe bomb explodes at Centennial Olympic Park during the 1996 Summer Olympics. Another one was found by a security guard. Of course, he was immediately accused of being responsible. 1997, about 50 people were killed at the Cizarouk massacre in Algeria. It took place at the Cizarouk neighborhood in the south of Larba in Algeria. About 50 people were killed. It was at the peak of a civil conflict began after the military's cancellation of the 1992 election set to be won by the Islamic Salvation Front. The two major Islamist guerrilla groups, Armed Islamic Group and the AIS, and several minor ones were fighting the government. Larba was a major center for the FIS's armed wing, the Islamic Salvation Army, which the government had recently declared war on. Mustafa Kartali, a former GIA chief who had split from him in 1995 and become head of the AIS's brigade, was based in that area. When in doubt, let's just go shoot somebody. 2002 Ukraine air show disaster. A Sukhoi Su-27 fighter crashed during an air show in Lviv, Ukraine. Killed 77 and injured more than 500 others. It's the deadliest air show disaster in history. 2005, after an incident during STS-114, NASA grounds the space shuttle. They did it pending an investigation of the continuing problem with the shredding of foam insulation from the external fuel tank. 2015, at least 7 people are killed and a lot are injured after gunmen attack an Indian police station in Punjab. And in 2016, at a news conference, presidential candidate Donald Trump expresses the hope Russians can recover 30,000 emails that were deleted from Hillary Clinton's personal server, and that was used by Pencil Neck Shift as a basis for one of the impeachment articles. He was colluding with the Russians. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances. Christian Feast Day, Aretheus, and the rest of Christianity. Aurelius and Natalia, Companions of the Martyrs of Cordoba. Morus, Pantaleon, and Sergius. Pantaleon, 7 Sleepers of Ephesus in Roman Martyrology. National Sleepyhead Day in Finland. Theobald of Marley. Blessed Titus Bansma. Day of Victory in the Great Fatherland Liberation War in North Korea. Iglesia Ni Cristo Day in the Philippines. Jose Celso Barbosa Day in Puerto Rico. And Martyrs and Wounded Soldiers Day in Vietnam. Okay, let's see what else we might have, if anything. In 2017, American playwright and actress Am Shepard, who plays adroitly blended images of the American West, died at age 73. In 2003, British-born American entertainer and comic actor Bob Hope, who was known for his rapid-fire delivery of jokes and one-liners, died in California on this date. Let's see what else we might have. In 1586, Walter Raleigh brings the first tobacco to England from Virginia. First time he was seen smoking, I understand that somebody threw some water on him, thought he was on fire. In 1921, Frederick Banting and Charles Best isolate insulin at the University of Toronto. In 1999, Tony Hawk's the first skateboarder to land a 900, whatever that is. Leo DeRocha was born on this date in history. And in 2012, Queen Elizabeth II opens the 30th Olympics in London. With some help from James Bond. In 1857, Emperor of Mexico, Maximilian I, who was 25 at the time, married Princess Charlotte of Belgium, who was only 17. All right, let's see what else we might have. In 1214, at the Battle of Bouvines, Philip Augustus of France defeated John of England. 1245, Frederick II is deposed by a council at Lyons that they found him guilty of sacrilege. 1775, Benjamin Rush became the first Surgeon General of the Continental Army. 1777, the Marquis de Lafayette arrived in New England to help the rebellious American colonists fight the British. Let's see. 1804, the 12th Amendment to the Constitution is ratified. Electors were directed to vote for a president and vice president rather than the first two choices for president. 1866, Cyrus Field successfully completed the Atlantic Cable. Went from North America to Europe. 1909, Orville Wright set a record for the longest airplane flight. His testing the first Army airplane and kept it in the air for an hour, 12 minutes, and 40 seconds. 1944, on this date, U.S. troops completed the liberation of Guam. In 1964, President Johnson sent an additional 5,000 advisors to South Vietnam. In 1965, the Federal Cigarette Labeling and Advertising Act was signed into law. Had to put a health warning on cigarette packages. And on this day in 2006, Intel Corp. introduced its Core 2 Duo microprocessor. Well, we're going to move from our history segment and talk about military encounters with extraterrestrials, which has been our topic for the last few shows. Well, they got involved in a number of battles in Vietnam. Of course, none of our weapons had any effect on. Now, I talked about the Bon Sang incident, where both sides squared off with a UFO, and when the North Vietnamese fired RPGs, rocket-propelled grenades at the UFO. Now, the UFO managed to neutralize the RPGs and started attacking the North Vietnamese. And at that point, American tanks, which had been in conflict with the North Vietnamese, opened up on the UFO. And supposedly, the tanks shot the UFO down, and our troops found several alien bodies and at least one survivor in the wreckage. Now, there had been a number of U.S. casualties, so the American commander, who was a major, called for a medevac. He was told nothing was available. Everything was being used in a search for another UFO. He told him he had shot it down, and a helicopter came immediately. When it arrived, there was a CIA agent on board who refused to accept wounded GIs. But instead, he would take the alien casualty. So at that point, the major is supposed to have shot the alien and had his tanks grind the wreckage and extraterrestrial bodies into the ground. Chopper pilot overruled the CIA agent and took the American wounded on board. Now, word of the Bon Sang incident, which is what this is called, rapidly spread among U.S. servicemen throughout the region, making them jump in, primed to go off half-cocked at anything resembling a cross between Charlie and an alien. Just after midnight, when Lieutenant Pete Snyder and the American crew of Swiftboat PCF-12 set out under a brightly moonlit sky down the Cua Viet, the same disastrous river where Captain Cooper got his Silver Star for courage under fire. After a half hour on the water, Snyder got a message from another patrol boat not far away. That commander, Lieutenant Richard Davis, requested immediate assistance against a pair of attacking enemy helicopters. Now, during the Vietnam War, enemy helicopter was a term used as a euphemism for UFOs because the North Vietnamese only operated fixed-wing aircraft. They weren't called UFOs, they were called enemy helicopters. And that's according to General George Brown, commander of the 7th U.S. Air Force and deputy commander of air operations for the Military Assistance Command in Vietnam. He served in that position from 68 to 70, later chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. So as Lieutenant Snyder's vessel approached the other boat, he and his three crew members saw two glowing spheroids hanging motionlessly above the other boat. Moments later, a sudden flash of blinding light illuminated PCF-19. It was instantly engulfed in a terrific explosion, killed five of the seven-man crew, including Davis. Spheroids vanished before the thunder of the blast echoed away from the riverbanks. PCF-12 picked up the two wounded survivors, the gunner's mate and the seaman, and they were told how the UFO had followed them for miles up the Cua Viet before attacking. Lieutenant Snyder radioed in a preliminary report to the U.S. Navy base at Saigon and got orders to complete his patrol. Just at that point, his second engine man, Jeff Steffs, frantically called out the appearance of two enemy helicopters silently but steadily approaching their vessel. According to Steffs, we spotted two aircraft hovering on our port and starboard beams about 300 yards away and 100 feet above the water. And as the boat swung about to put the aircraft ahead and astern of PCF-12, I could hear Mr. Snyder requesting air support identification of these helicopters. The answer from the beach was no friendly aircraft in the area. Have contacts near you on radar and starlight scope. So the upshot was they had to be North Vietnamese. But, according to Steffs, they were not. For the next 2.5 hours, long beyond the operational range of any contemporaneous helicopter, PCF-12 played cat and mouse with the anomalous helos, opening fire on them at close range with twin fiddler-caliber machine guns from a forward turret. A pair of 7.62mm machine guns mounted on the port and starboard sides and an MK-19 grenade launcher. But their combined firepower, even though it was accurate and concentrated, didn't have any effect on the incoming spheroids. One of them flew so close to the boat that Steffs could see that a rounded front like an observation helo and saw what looked like two crewmen sitting inside it, side by side. Now, no pilot and gunner would fly an observation helicopter into combat sitting side by side behind a plexiglass canopy. If they had, they would have been shot down in a heartbeat. As Lieutenant Snyder repeatedly radioed headquarters for backup, PCF-12 churned Cua Viet's murky water at top speed in a desperate effort to escape the dogged pursuers. His requests for assistance were finally answered about 3:20 in the morning when several Phantom jet fighters roared in low overhead, chased off the menacing spheroids with six-barrel Gatling cannons clattering away and streaking AIM-9 Sidewinder air-to-air missiles. Now, unknown to Snyder and his crew, radar operators confirmed no less than 30 enemy helicopters of various dimensions, some of them as large as a warship, closing on Da Nang at 5,000 feet, on Vietnam's east coast at 375 miles per hour, more than twice the speed of any helicopter in the world at that time. When these contacts were visually identified by forward spotters along the eastern DMZ, that's a six-mile-wide strip separating North and South Vietnam. The entire Red Beach base area was thrown into full alert. More U.S. 7th Air Force interceptors were dispatched to engage the flying armada that had additionally fired, which was additionally fired on by every anti-aircraft gun at the Americans' disposal. Seemingly in the face of such resistance, the glowing lights veered away and went out over the China Sea. It was here the U.S. Naval Fleet was stationed in company with a Perth-class guided missile destroyer of the Royal Australian Navy. Blacked out, maintaining radio silence, HMAS Hobart was patrolling near Tiger Island about 13 miles off Cape Lay when her starboard side was struck by a guided missile. It penetrated the aluminum hull and exploded, killing seaman R.J. Butterworth and wounding two crew members. As Hobart's deck gun got off five shots at an unidentified attacker, two more missiles slammed into her starboard side, killed Chief Electrician Richard Hunt and injured several others.
After daybreak, military authorities were informed to their horror that the blacked-out Australian warship had been attacked by American fighter planes, who had mistaken her in the dark for a UFO. And they were further mortified to learn that none of the 30 enemy helicopters had been shot down, even though they shot thousands of cannon shells and a dozen or so guided missiles trying to neutralize them. No physical evidence of helicopters destroyed had been discovered in the area of activity, according to Royal Australian Navy News on August 1st. There was extensive reconnaissance produced any evidence of enemy helicopter operations in or near the DMZ. Not a single scrap of wreckage related to the events of the previous month was ever found. Air Force pilots, rattled by too many ferocious extraterrestrial encounters, have become trigger-happy, mistaking the Hobart for an alien craft. Under the Royal Australian Navy news coverage, military spokesmen explaining how losses from friendly fire occurred in the midst of a confused skirmish with enemy helicopters. When these proved too elusive, blame fell on faulty radar systems and pilot misinterpretation of radar returns, minus any mention of the mysterious lights that had overflown the U.S. Air Force. Radar operators and ground observer veterans of the confrontation knew better, but were told to say nothing. Years later, Jim Steffes, now retired, published his own eyewitness version. He said, "I know what the official story is, but this is mine, as true and as complete as I can remember." The engagement in the deadly confusion of June 15, 1968 may have represented less of a serious attack than a successful demonstration of otherworldly superiority. 2 years before, an otherwise meaningless episode, maybe aimed at making a similar impression, took place on the south central coast of Vietnam during mid-1966 in Da Trang, which was home at that time to more than 40,000 troops, 2,000 of them USGIs. Sheltering in a valley along the China Sea, the heavily defended base featured several warehouses and a fuel storage area on the west, plus docks and equipment storage facilities in the south. On the evening of June 18th, eight bulldozers were cutting roads by the light of their headlamps around Hawk Hill, about a half mile west of the compound. While under a mile to the east, two Douglas A-1 Sky Raiders, piston-powered, propeller-driven anachronisms in the jet age, were warming up on their newly bulldozed airstrip. About a mile to the southwest, just offshore, a Shell oil tanker lay peacefully at anchor in the bay. Now, this tranquil scene was the last in more than a month of enemy inactivity. To 100 or so soldiers casually gathered in an open area of the base to watch an outdoor movie about 8 in the evening. Less than 2 hours later, the film stopped because the projector's power source, all six new independently operated generators, stopped functioning at the same moment. It plunged on in the Trang into total darkness. About a half mile away, under Air Force Base, another Air Force Base simultaneously experienced an identical electrical outage. The engine of both Sky Raiders whirled to a stop while the headlights and motors of the all eight bulldozers switched off. As somebody who experienced the power failure explained, there wasn't a car, truck, plane, or anything else that ran for about 4 minutes after the sky lit up with an exceptionally bright light. At first, everybody thought it was a flare, which was going off all the time, and then we found that it wasn't. It came from the north and was moving from real slow to real fast speeds. Some of the jet fighter pilots saw it, said it looked like it would be about 25,000 feet in altitude, and that's when the panic broke out. It dropped right toward the troops on the ground and stopped dead still about 500 feet up. Made the little valley and the mountains around it look like it was the middle of the day. It lit up everything. And it went up, straight up, and completely out of sight in about 2 to 3 seconds. Now, extraterrestrial demonstrations of Earthling inferiority were impartially carried out over North as well as South Vietnam. On September 29, 1972, a correspondent for Agence France-Presse published his personal account of an invulnerable spheroid hitting thousands of residents in the North Vietnamese capital, saw under the bright daylight conditions. Gene Thorvald's feature article was carried around the world, including Lansing, Michigan State Journal, beneath the headlines, "What Was the UFO Over Hanoi?" Watching the craft through binoculars, Thorvald reported that a mysteriously unidentified object appeared in the clear blue sky over Hanoi Friday. attracting missile fire from the ground, but apparently remaining motionless. They're spherical in shape, a luminous orange in color, and clearly at a very high altitude. North Vietnamese, their defenders fired 3 surface-to-air missiles, but they couldn't reach the target. Object remained in the same high spot for about an hour and 20 minutes, although toward the end it appeared less bright than before. Less than a month later, and half a world away from the war in Vietnam, a series of naval engagements took place with an extraterrestrial intruder north of Bergen in Sognefjord, Norway's largest fjord at 127 miles long, although less than 4 miles wide. It was here during the early morning hours, November 12th, that a patrol boat on duty in the middle of the fjord, where its depths are the greatest, over 4,000 feet, picked up what appeared to be a Soviet Whiskey-class submarine on its sonar scope. Royal Norwegian Navy was alerted to arrive in a task force of destroyers, submarines, and auxiliary aircraft carrier that launched its attack helicopters. These were pairs of Westford WS-61 Sea Kings, each armed with 4 depth charges. They were dropped in the vicinity to sonar contact. Shortly after that, all the Sea Kings experienced a variety of abnormal instrument failures that forced them to withdraw from further action. They were replaced by land-based attack planes in the Royal Norwegian Navy Air Service. And they also suffered from similar electromagnetic anomalies, but they continued to fly cover for the growing number of naval units gathered in the fjord. Their target, meanwhile, had eluded them. So the western end of the fjord, which led out to the Atlantic Ocean, was tightly blockaded, trapping Norway's underwater intruder inside the narrow estuary. More than 2 weeks, the fjord's depths were meticulously searched in a well-executed grid pattern that finally bore fruit after the first light on November 26th, when sonar rediscovered its lost contact near the mouth of the Sognefjord, where the bottom rises abruptly to about 330 feet below the surface. It was apparently attempting to break out into the sea. Well, destroyers closed in, dropping depth charges, which brought their evasive quarry to the surface. It was not a Soviet submarine, though, but approximately twice as large as the USSR 274-foot Whiskey-class boats, and it bore no resemblance to the immense cigar-shaped vessel lacking a conning tower. The lead destroyer immediately opened fire with its deck guns on this motionless craft, but didn't have any effect. Norwegian submarine KNM Sakhalina then launched a spread of torpedoes at the sitting duck target, but all either malfunctioned or missed. And before another attack could be readied, the huge unidentifiable vessel gradually slipped beneath the waves and inexplicably vanished from the sonar of every ship. Well, later that afternoon, civilians chanced to see this gargantuan object floating leisurely on the surface before it abruptly submerged near the island of Krakenes, not far from the fjord at the Atlantic entrance. 18 minutes later, 5 policemen from the village of Skrolden on Samba Island saw its surface and informed the Navy. Distance covered by the object between these islands and the time separating both reports indicated it traveled at 124 miles per hour, far beyond the performance of any known submarine. Well, on that note, we're going to bring this show to an end. I'm still recovering from surgery. So we'll be back tomorrow, and once again, we'll talk about more military encounters with extraterrestrials. Till then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.